This is TFYLP Newsstand, a production of TFTalk.net. Join the cast as they discuss the world of Transformers comics and novels from both the past and present. Now, here are your hosts, I Am Unicron and Insane Galvatron.
Hello, everyone, and welcome again to another exciting edition of Transformers Newsstand, or TFYLP Newsstand, although this is really the first one we're doing a review last week, which is our introduction. I am Insane Galvatron, and with me is I Am Unicron.
Hello, everyone.
All right, so last week we talked about we're going to start. The point of this podcast was to take everybody through the old original IDW stuff, because no other podcast seems to be covering that right now. So this week we're going to be starting with Infiltration. The significance of this, for those of you who haven't been reading the early stuff, is this is kind of the groundwork that Furman wrote, because he started out writing IDW comic. After Dreamway tanked, he was writing that stuff, so IDW hired him. He came in, started out, and was doing some really good world building. And a lot of the stuff that's laid out in these early issues is in the current comics. Like, for example, Infiltration, as this one's called, this series, is the Phase 1. It's basically the Decepticons when during the Great War. I'm kind of spoiling a little bit what's going to be in these issues here, but they would go to these to planets to strip them of the resources, and they had six phases. And one of those phases, the first one was infiltration. And then, like I said, we'll go through the other phases as we go through the comics. You find what they are. But the reason why this is relevant now is because you have a lot of references to, like, Six Shot, Overlord, and if you're more than meets the eye reader, you're introduced to, what's the guy's name? The other pretender that was a Japanese only guy. The DJD killed him in their first appearance. Who was that, Brandon?
Shoot, I can't remember his name, dude.
Black Shadow.
God dang it.
Okay, these were the Phase Sixers. Because they were basically, they initiated and completed Phase 6 of Megatron's plan. So I don't think, as we read through, I don't think they ever get to reveal all the phases. I think we see two of them actually in the books. But then plans get jumped ahead. So Megatron initiates Phase 6 early and calls in Six Shot, which again will be later. And Ratchet kind of fills in the blanks for a couple of the phases in between that should have happened. But I don't think we ever found out what Phase 5 was. I think Phase 1 and 2 we see in the book. Ratchet talks about 3 and 4. And then I think Six Shot comes in when they do Phase 6. I could be wrong on that. It's been a while since I've read these, and I binge read a lot of comics. So I may have just missed that detail. Do you remember, Brandon, or how far have you read in this stuff before now?
I've read most of it, but I don't remember. You know, actually, they talk about Stage 5 in this first series a little bit, going into Stage 6, but obviously it's I don't want to get ahead too far, but So maybe this would be the series with Stage 5 right out the back?
Well, this is Phase 1. I know at the very end, Megatron says Phase 2. We're going to move on to Phase 2, which is the next series. But I can't remember if it was in this one or the next series where Ratchet explains it to the kids. But you're right. He made
it. It's this series.
Okay. Because I will be honest with our listeners here. I've had a really hectic week. Part of the reason this comic podcast has been so slow in getting started, just because my life has been crazy. Because I've been actually wanting to start this for months. And so I've had such a busy week that I haven't had a chance to reread this series. So I'm mostly running off my memories of the first time I read it about a year ago. And, again, I binge read so much, it's hard to remember what happened just in this series. Because I was actually, when I'm trying to recall it, I was remembering stuff from later series in these books. I was just kind of thumbing through them a minute ago, and I was like, oh, wow, I didn't get there yet. Mm-hmm. But we will start out with issue zero, which I will hold up my tablet here so you can see the cover. I'm not going to show every page because I don't want to get in trouble for reading, you know, the whole thing on air, let people to see it, take screen capture or whatever. I don't want IDW cracking down on us for showing everything, but I may show an interesting panel or two this way. This was the, if I'm not mistaken, was issue zero a free comic book day comic?
Oh, I think it was, because It just has like a little bit of actual comic in it, and they got some really cool stuff in here.
Yeah, well, notice here the copyright. I'm on the copyright page, which is the roll call page. It says it came out in October of 2005, which I always thought Free Comic Book Day was like in May. So, I mean, that may not be accurate. It may not have been a Free Comic Book Day, but or there may have had a secondary. I don't remember. I just know I picked this book up when it was new because I think it was free. But then, like I said, I didn't pick up any subsequent issues. So we'll start. That's the roll call page, and then we turn to page one. Which is just, there's our bus station. And this is where we're introduced to the character Verity Carlo, which, again, for new readers that haven't read this old stuff, she's the character, you've probably seen her as Ultra Magnus's avatar. And if you've read Last Stand of the Wreckers, she was in that book, pretty influential. Which is weird, because they introduce three human characters in this series. And they're all really good characters, and I really hate to see them kind of just disappear after the Furman run ended. You know, we've been hinted at with Verity a few times with Last Stand of the Wreckers, and then, you know, Ultra Magnus' Avatar. Now that the series is back to Earth, keep hoping we'll see them, but it doesn't look like they're going to show them to us yet. But anyway, starting here, we see a guy getting on a bus, and it turns out Verity is just kind of casing. She's watching, being observant. She's just kind of been on the run. There's kind of like a, I don't know what you call, almost like a vagabond. It's like she just kind of travels around, you know, kind of steals whatever she needs to get by. She has an online presence. She has a lot of friends on the internet. She's never met in person until one of them she meets in this issue. But anyway, she's boarding the bus. She's kind of casing things out and, you know, picking things to steal there on page one. Of course, page two, we see she's got her mark. You know, a guy had a little PDA type device, which, you know, was kind of like our iPhones, but I guess 2005, that wasn't, you know, common technology. So it was something she could get online with, basically. And then we see the page two there, when we see Verity, but then we see a black Camaro, which, you know, doesn't really tell us who that is, but we do see through its eyes, and there's some Decepticon insignias as it's, you know, acquiring its target, which is the same guy that Verity is casing out to steal from. What were your thoughts, Brandon, when you first read through this issue? Because that's all that really happens is they're on the bus. Verity steals the PDA from the guy.
Well, when I first got into it, it was cool seeing the Camaros as, you know, Decepticons. Because, you know, nowadays it's Bumblebee, which is kind of funny. And back then they were like the Viacons. So, not really, good, but, you know, they weren't Viacons, but they were, you know. And what was it, Run Amok and Runabout.
Yeah, when you first spot them, you just see the black one. So you don't know who it is. You know, I'll be honest with you, my first read through, I thought they might have been a Stunticon.
Yeah.
Until you get up, you know, to page, well, that's page six at the bottom, but that, you know, counting the covers as well. It's when she plays sick to get off the bus, the page that is. Then you see the black one and the white one. That's when I put two together and realized who they were.
Yeah.
But it's funny because, you know, like Bumblebee's Camaro now, to sell new Camaro. But this was 2005. Those Camaros have been out of production for 3 years at this point.
Yeah.
Anyway, so she plays sick to get off the bus. We'd seen earlier that, I guess, Runabout had acquired the target, was the guy on the bus. So she gets off the bus goes on, and then they go on after the bus. And she hitchhikes, and that's when we meet our second human character that's introduced. Now, if you're looking along with me, Brandon, the page that has Verity first getting picked up by Hunter or Onion, at the top of the page is Oregon. We see some Decepticons, you know, target sanitized, but the cache is missing. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we know this later to find out that this is going to be Starscream. At the top there saying find it. But this panel up here in the top corner, I can't make out heads or tails of what's going on in that. Is that supposed to be like the inside of one of the cars, or is that inside the Decepticon base? I mean, it almost looks like Soundwave's chest or something there.
It looks like Soundwave's chest, and it looks like they're connected on the inside of a base doing something. Probably Soundwave's communicating.
Yeah, I mean, I'm completely bumfuzzled.
Because the way it says target sanitized, but the cache is missing, you know. No real motion to it, no nothing to it.
Well, that almost also kind of sounds like maybe that's the radio report, you know, the Runamuck and Runabout caught the bus, obviously. They said they sanitized, which means
you know,
get to that poor guy. But his little PDA device was missing because Verity had stolen it.
Not to get off subject, but if you look at that panel, dude, doesn't that look like that can be like Ratchet or Ironhide's like chest?
That panel, I can't tell what's going on in there. It just looks like a bunch of random stuff drawn. It doesn't make any sense to me. But otherwise, I mean, the rest of the art, rest of the book is fine. It's just that panel, I have no clue what's going on.
Yeah.
So anyway, we go back to the van. We saw Verity hitchhiking at the last page. This one, she's been picked up by Hunter. He's introducing himself. She's being very standoffish because obviously a girl travels on the road, hitchhikes a lot, learns to be a little standoffish. As a matter of fact, I think when some stuff goes down in a minute, she pulls some pepper spray on him. Because she's wanting to know what he's up to. He's got little alien things dangling from his mirror. And she's asking what he's doing all the way out there in the middle of nowhere. And it turns out he's like one of these X-Files conspiracy theory type guys that's looking for alien activity. Of course, in a Transformers book, there actually are aliens, and they're Transformers.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just, she said, are you looking for little green men? And he's like, not exactly. So anyway, they're going along, and then this is when he swerves, and she gets out her pepper spray on the next page. And he's like, hey, hold on, no, I'm not trying anything. He's like, look, there's smoke up ahead. And so they go up to investigate. This is when they find the wrecked bus. And so they get out and talking to the bus driver, and this is when they find out that the guy she had stolen from is missing, but everybody else is there and everybody else is fine. And then about that time, there's some explosions in the distance, and Hunter notices a jet coming at them. Now I say, no, I'm jumping ahead. Actually, they get back in the van, they're driving away. There was some boom, boom, boom in the background, but they just get leave. And then so he's kind of filling her in on his conspiracy theory stuff about giant robots. She's laughing because she thinks it's ridiculous. And this is when you have a two-page spread. But my computer, my tablet's kind of putting it on just one. It's a two-page spread here of Thundercracker, thabooming over top of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is where it starts getting a little more action. We've got the two characters introduced. Then a chase begins. They're trying to run away. The jet keeps circling around. And Hunter, quickly realizes this is not our military. And so, of course, then we see another check-in with the Decepticons in this panel. The caches are reacquired. And, it looks like Starscream there. It's about time. Contain. And, of course, the van gets blown up. Hunter and Verity barely escape. And as Thundercracker flies by, Hunter notices there's no pilot. And so that's when he realizes, okay, this is alien. And then right when it looks like they're about to be splattered in this middle panel here, an ambulance shows up with a gun sticking out of the roof. But you can't guess who that is. And basically, kind of shoots a Thundercracker, kind of just blinds him, distracts him, or whatever. So he kind of hits top of a mountain. And then he kind of does his best Arnold Schwarzenegger impression. There's like a person in the seat. And at the bottom here, he says, if you want to live, come with me. I don't think it's kind of good on my computer there, but yeah, if you want to live, come with me. It was like, almost like Terminator 2, Ratchet doing his impression of Arnold Schwarzenegger there. So for a introductory issue, free issue, we see four Transformers, three of them are Decepticons, and meet our two humans. I remember when I read this, I was really excited about it because it actually was a pretty decent comic. But I wasn't ready to give them any money after what happened with Dreamwave. I was like, no, I'm not getting recalled up in this. So that was as far as I read the first time through. But I'm glad I went back and gave this another look because it's actually pretty good. What were your thoughts there on issue zero?
It's actually it's decent. For me, what really got me on it is the story is okay. It's really sharp. It's pretty quick. But the bonus material in it, it's really what sells me on issue zero more than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, you got this page here. Trying to remember, Chris Ryall, I guess, was the editor.
Mm-hmm.
He's like dressed as a robot, and he's just kind of spilling out a bunch of information. Basically, and then you got an interview with Simon Furman.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about right there. Yeah, that's pretty decent. Gives you some good insight. It's actually a pretty decent interview too.
Well, to be completely honest with you, I've never read it. Really? I just kind of skipped over it. I want to keep going through the comic. I probably should. After the podcast is over, I'll read it.
Yeah, it's pretty decent. It answers a few questions, a little things. I mean, granted, it's old now. I'm sure a lot of stuff is updated, but it's pretty cool to go back and read it. If no one's ever read it, it's a nice little tidbit in there. You know,
see where Freeman Green was at the time.
Yeah, see where his mindset was and kind of what he thought about things, and it's pretty cool.
All right. So now we'll jump on ahead to the next issue. This will be the official first issue. It's issue number one. This came out, according to the roll call page, published January 2006. So there's a few months in between. And it starts out kind of giving a little backstory for anybody who didn't read issue zero, if you're actually buying issue one as the first one. You see your computer screen here, some conspiracy theory stuff going on. And, you know, of course, it's Hunter. We see it on the next page. It's Hunter doing his conspiracy theory stuff. And then all of a sudden, there's Ratchet, and they're riding inside with his holo avatar, which at the time, you don't know it's a holo avatar. It's a new concept. We'd never really seen in Transformers before when this happened, when this first came out. So, you know, you go, okay, here's Ratchet. Obviously, that's Ratchet. Who's this dude behind the wheel? You know, it took me a – they eventually explain it, but at first it was a little off-putting. And so they think he's creepy, and they're driving along. And they realize they're going really, really fast, faster than any normal ambulance would go. This guy's kind of fizzing in and out, you know, as his holo matrix kind of glitches there. You see he's got, like, the funny lines on his neck. Like the hologram is glitching. And then we see flashback to where he picked her up initially. And then all of a sudden, Run Amok and Runabout turn up and start giving Ratchet some problems. And they're still doing introductions here, introducing themselves to Ratchet, even though we know who the characters are. But again, for people who didn't read issue zero, they got to learn who people are. So Ratchet's like, hey, you guys done arguing. We've got to take care of these guys. Of course, the next page, we see Verity's story again, where she pickpocketed and ended up on the bus. And that's how they met. And then Ratchet's finally going to deal with Run Amok and Runabout. And, of course, he knows who these guys are. That's how they like to play, so they're not going to be so easy to deal with. Because the Jet, you know, which we know, Thundercracker, he's just a grunt. He was no problem. These two like to play. So we get a couple pages of that encounter where Ratchet's, you know, getting beat up as he's dispatching Run Amok and Runabout. And when he finally, you know, crashes them off the road, Thundercracker shows back up. But then he poofs some black smoke, which blinds Thundercracker, and it kind of buys him some time to escape. So she pulls out the little PDA that she stole that they don't know she stole. They have no idea that's what the Decepticons are after, but they are. And so she gets online after seeing where they are, and it turns out she knows somebody in the area. And so they're going to, you know, she's going to, like, hey, tell Ratchet, hey, where to go to kind of get some help and get some repairs. There's actually Ratchet on this next page here. We see the underwater Autobot base. Ratchet had phoned in. They basically said, you know, hey, just, you know, it's not worth the resources to pursue this. Just, you know, get rid of the humans and get back to base. And then that's when Verity says, hey, we need to go to Riverside. I know somebody there. And this is where we meet our third human, Jimmy Pink. Now, this is the guy that, like I said, Verity knew from online but never met in person before. But he's a mechanic. That's why she wanted to go there to help Ratchet get some repairs. So Ratchet wheels into the garage. More banter between the humans and, you know, as they're getting to know each other and letting us get to know them. We're learning a little more about Verity's history, and they're all still thinking the holo avatar is a person. They don't know it's not a real person yet. They think he's creepy. They don't know what's up with this weird van, because they don't know these are robots yet. Well, except for Hunter. He suspects it, but he can't prove it. And Ratchet's not revealing anything yet. And so we have another couple pages of some interactions there. And then finally, Hunter gets out. You know, the Decepticons are searching, but the PDA's off, so they can't find it. But then Hunter has it, and looks like he's turning it on just to see, you know, what the deal is, why she's been so secretive with it earlier, didn't want to let him see it, as Jimmy is fixing Ratchet. Now, what they don't know is when he turned that on, it gave a signal the Decepticons will show up. And Ratchet finally confesses that Hunter's right. Everything he says is true. There are giant alien robots. And he shows them the picture on the PDA, which is what they're after. And then Verity gets mad because they took it from her. She storms outside. And while she's out there, she comes running back in, says, Decepticon, it said, changed. And then, boom, as a door gets smashed open behind them. Ratchet says, they found us. And the next page, the door is getting ripped away. And finally, we get to the end of the book, where we see the robots in their full glory, running back around, about revealed. It's the first time the humans get to see them in robot mode in person, any Transformer. So this is like the big reveal, last page of the book, of the issue. So like you said, Brandon, it's kind of a slow, it's kind of a short story, and they kind of drag it out. That's another thing I thought first time I read through these is, to go through a 22-page comic, doesn't seem like there's a whole lot happening as far as action. But there's a lot of story being told, a lot of characters being fleshed out. So it's good stuff. What are your thoughts on issue number one here?
It was decent. But, you know, looking at it now in this day and age and especially after the movies come out, what do you think about this being a big inspiration for Michael Bay when he did the first movie? Remember, everybody had the holograms and everything else, and this is kind of where they introduced it at, and it took them a while, and kind of neat, huh? Yeah.
It's very similar.
Blackout, first Transform?
Well, I think the approach they were taking to the comic is very similar to the approach that Michael Bay took. You want to get the general populace, or in this case, just the general comic book reader. They didn't want to just get the hardcore or old school fans like us. They wanted to get the comic book readers to go to the comic book store every week to pick this up in addition to their other stuff. So they're kind of doing that slow reveal, just like with the movies, to get the general public into it. You got to start with the humans, because pretty much all other comic books are human-based. I mean, they may be aliens, but they're humanoid aliens, actually flesh and blood, like Superman, or you've got guys like Iron Man. So it's like comic book readers are going to read about people that they're going to connect to, initially, until you get more time with the robots, then they'll connect to the robots. And that, I think that's what they did, the slow reveal, a lot of character focus on the humans. I think, like I said, at the time we didn't have a lot of Transformers fiction other than whatever cartoon was out. So I think at this time it was like Cybertron.
I think Cybertron was just finishing up.
Yeah.
Or was it animated that just came out? No, no, Cybertron was animated. Finishing up.
Yeah, this
was animated. Was after.
Because I think Cybertron came out in 2005.
Yeah, Cybertron was 2005. It finished up, and in 2006 is when they started re-releasing everything, like the old movie, like 2006 mm-hmm. and 2007. 2006 was when, Shout Factory, when they re-released the original animated movie with all the bonus stuff on it and all that?
Sony, I think.
Was it Sony? I'd have to look on my disc.
I remember the 2006 BotCon in Lexington. They actually had a movie theater downtown Lexington where they showed the 86 movie.
Awesome, dude.
It was their version where they had remastered it, Hot Rod looked kind of pink. Yeah, so I remember they showed that there. So that was Sony.
Yeah, it was nice with all the bonus features and all the original toy commercials on there and stuff. Pretty neat.
Like now, we're so overwhelmed with the Transformer stuff, with the movies and everything, you can just go straight into the robot goodness. But this was a different time. Back then, this was the first, Transformers media aimed at adults, well, since Dreamwave, but it had tanked. It didn't last that long. They're really going for the general public with this, and they're trying to go with the slow reveal to build the excitement. You can tell Simon Berman was playing the long game, because, if you're just only planning to do a short series and then see where it goes, you're going to have to get to the good stuff quick.
Yeah, you got to move the story a lot faster.
Yeah, for the slow build, you can tell he had a long game in mind.
Yeah.
So with that said, we'll jump to the next issue.
And can you show, too, if you got it on the next issue, the cover and then the special edition cover? Because you can see who they're targeting.
I don't know
about this one. On issue number 2, there is actually...
Yeah, I only have one because I scan.
Okay. There's actually... Let me count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 5 different covers on issue 2 that there's possible covers that you can get.
Why have I had so many?
I don't know, but a lot of it throws back to, like on one, there's G1 Starscream, like the toy. On his packaging, you know how he was in robot mode? Mm-hmm. Let me pull it up on my tablet real quick here. I got it on my desktop. And I think it's just really cool. And or is it a double cover? I think it's like a double cover. It's like AA. And then we got B. And then C, D, another B. Yeah, I think it's like a little double cover type thing. But it is neat because it showed Thundercracker after Ratchet. And another one shows Thundercracker shooting the kids with Ratchet in the background and a weird-looking Megatron back there. And then they show Prowl pulling a gun, some other stuff.
Well, I do remember they've always been real big on multiple covers.
Yeah, it's pretty neat, dude. It's pretty cool, man.
All right, well, let's get into the story. Since I did the last couple issues, if you don't care, just kind of do the page-by-page walkthrough. Brandon, kind of the synopsis of what's going on.
Well, in this issue, they start off, you know, obviously the Decepticons, they kind of see who they are now, and Ratchet's there, and he's kind of like, hey, this is what you want? And they kind of, he goes to hand it to him, it blows up and all that good stuff, and then they pull out guns, and the wall kind of comes down, and then Ratchet transforms, and that's when the kids finally see that it's Ratchet. I don't think they really put it together yet at this moment, but they see the robot, it comes out from the rubble, and then it's actually Ratchet. So Ratchet finally gets revealed in his robot form.
Yeah, because doesn't the explosion pretty much crushes the Holo Avatar, so they think the dude's dead.
Yeah, it covers it.
And it transforms back, and then the Holo Avatar's back.
Yep. And then, so they kind of figure it out that's Ratchet. And then, basically, kind of they're chasing him through the city, through traffic. And on a little side cut, they actually find the guy. He's dead. The one that actually had the PDA at first.
Mm-hmm.
And they find his dead body. I'm on page somewhere around there.
Yeah, I'm keeping up with you.
Okay. There we go. Yep, that's it right there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still chasing through traffic, tearing everything up, destroying everything. They're just banging up Ratchet pretty hard. And they go into that battle mode, which is actually used quite often now in the movies. Bumblebee's battle mode and the different battle modes. You see it on there?
Yeah, there was actually a line of toys in the first movie called Stealth Force.
Yep.
The toys basically were just the vehicles that would do that.
Yep, and then that's what these pop up, and it's pretty neat. I'm trying to remember if I saw them before this because I really don't remember. It's hard thinking about it now because I watched all the movies, and then now this is out, and I'm going back and reading this again because it's been years.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to think if it was really out before then. It probably was. I got to go back through my older Dreamwave comics and see. I think it was in there somewhere, maybe.
Oh, they had this in Dreamwave as well?
I don't remember. It's kind of blending together right now because it's been a while.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, it's kind of like me, too. I know as far as mainstream, I remember thinking this was kind of new at the time. I had read all Dreamwave stuff, and if that was in there, I must have missed it. But I first time I saw this in here, I thought it was really cool. It had like a mask feel.
Yeah.
With the mask line, the cars were going to transform, the gun stuff would come out.
And then that's why I was kind of making a Michael Bay connection, because if you notice a lot of stuff, unless they got together when this was being done, when the script was being written for the movie, and this comic was being written and being published, because a lot of the animation, a lot of little things kind of go along with it. You know, you see a lot of inspirations towards the movie, so I'm guessing if you're reading this and then you watch the 2007 movie, you'd be like, hey, man, okay.
Did we see much of this 2007 movie? I thought this didn't really show up until...
No, this came out a little bit later, the cars, but the hologram and stuff like that and all, that was all in the 2007 movie. Was it? Yeah. With Blackout, actually, was the first character.
All right, so let's move on in the story because we got a few more issues to get through.
Okay. Well, they get, it goes down, they're crashing, they're tearing up Ratchet, and then pops up the one little screen with a Starscream, which is, we first get our shot of a Starscream. that looks
shadows. He's popped up in the other issues, but he's just kind of in the shadows. You saw like his face.
Yeah, it's just his face, but here you kind of see him, and if you look at him, what does he look like? What figure does he look like? Just off the top of your head. I know it's kind of hard to see in here. You can see it a little bit better later on.
Well, I mean, he throws it at F-22, that's obvious.
Yeah.
And he looks kind of purple, so he almost looks like Skywarp.
Yeah, he looks like Skywarp, but his body style looks more like his Generations toy right now that's out. It looks similar to it. Then he's holding up this little orb. He's saying Destiny, he's talking to Blitzwing, is within his grasp. I know I'm kind of blowing through it pretty quick here, because it's really about Ratchet and the kids, and they're just chasing him, and they're destroying everything, trying to stop him. And
well, the little side scenes with like the humans, like finding that body, and there's like some people in a big corporation were talking, and then like this with Starscream, it's just kind of seeding some stuff that's going to come out later.
Yes. And then actually, when you go to on mine is page 20. I don't know what it is. When they're standing on the side of the road and that truck passes by. Right after the tanker, right after they pass by the tanker, the whole tanker thing.
Yeah, that's when he kind of loses
when he loses him.
Running up and running about.
And you see that truck pass by? It just goes by. Exactly. That's what I was fixing to say. It looks like Motor Master, doesn't it?
Here, if viewers can watch them live, can see I'm showing up on the screen there. Yeah, it looks like Motor Master. I don't think it actually was.
No, but I think they would maybe pay an homage to it in some kind of way, because dude has got the little red glass on there, the same body style. I mean, it's awesome, dude. I like to get in their minds and pick it one day and see all the little homage and stuff they're playing to it in here. And anyway, Ratchet takes a direct hit. And here we go. The rest, some of the other Autobots start showing up, which we have Prowl, Ironhide, and Sunstreaker. And they start fighting Thundercracker.
And I guess four Autobots was more than he could handle. It was just one. He seemed to be okay with chasing, but after having taken on four, he takes a couple hits.
Yeah, he's gone, dude. He's out of there, man. He can't handle that.
Yeah. But this mid-transformation panel, I really like when the other guys start to transform. He reminds me of the Swim Super GoBots from the 80s.
Future Machine. Yeah, that was a Future Machine.
Well, those are the Super GoBots. There was like the Hair Fiend, was like the Baron Von Joy, Psycho, all those ones that when they transformed the cockpit of the car made their head.
Yep.
I think Prowl kind of looks like a Super GoBot in that frame.
Yeah, that's what it does. It's pretty awesome, dude. Which at this time, they already own GoBots, so, who knows.
Yeah.
Now, after that, they turn on Ratchet, actually, because it's like Ratchet is, breaking the rules and stuff, and he's got them. He should have gotten rid of them, and he transformed in front of them, and now they're actually taking him like, he's a bad guy, so. And they're like,
He broke the protocol.
Yeah.
The Autobots are all about the rule of law and justice, and, he broke protocol, but he didn't just drop them off and come back to base like they said earlier.
Yeah. And then that's pretty much the end of this book. And then they show the Decepticon base on the last page with the awesome little Decepticon symbol off to the right. And then wicked.
I do have some of the other covers.
There you go. You got yours at the end. Mine's at the front of mine.
Because I was sitting here. I think here's the double cover.
Yep. Red. That's neat, ain't it?
Mm-hmm.
And then I got a little thing for you, man. If you look at the last page, when you look at the Decepticon base, what does that look like right at the bottom of it? If you can see it real quick. Because I like looking for the little things, dude. I like finding maybe that was an Easter egg. Maybe it wasn't. Who knows what it is.
Talking about like right here?
Yep, right there in the center, dude. The head. You can see the head, right? Yeah, you can see the face.
Yeah, it looks like a face.
Yep. It looks like it got eyes, got the jaws, got hair coming down, and it's awesome, dude. And then that pretty much takes care of that issue.
All right, so the next issue is number 3. published in March of 06. So, yeah, they're coming out monthly at this point. Their roll call page has more guys being revealed. I was trying to reread all these for this week. I actually got through those first three issues. This is where it's like, okay, I haven't read this stuff in a year. So I need a little help getting through what actually is happening here. But we see they're back on the Ark, and Sunstreaker's looking at a monitor with Ratchet, and it looks like is that Prowl standing behind them. And I guess Verity doesn't like the fact that it's kind of being held there, and she's threatening to erase everything on the PDA if they don't let them out. They're trying to figure out what to do with the humans because, you know, they're, I guess, fairly new to being on Earth. They haven't had much human interaction. So it's like an experiment. It's really weird because we see the Transformers treating humans the way humans would, like, say, go into a rainforest and see some, you know, new species or something and treat it like a sub-form of life. And it doesn't take long, though, before the Autobots realize that the humans are as intelligent as they are. But we see, I guess, this is Prowl just recounting the story. I guess he's on trial here, Ratchet.
Yeah, he's it's basically just kind of giving a little bit of telling of what's going on with the Autobots, and it is weird how they treat the humans on here, because it's completely different than like if you've been reading, you know, the Autobots always protected humans. They were friendly to humans, even from the get-go in the original G1 series. You know, and here it's like, man, why are you risking, why are you breaking protocol to save a couple of humans? They're nothing, you know?
Well, yeah, because it's like they've seen so many planets get wiped out through this process, yeah. these six phases of the Decepticons, that they figure they're all going to be pretty much dead anyway.
Yep.
But I'm on the page here where, like I said, you're just getting some arguments between Ratchet and Prowl and introducing some other Autobots kind of in the background, get a chance to show them. And, basically, Prowl's argument was that you put all these humans in the firing line, and Ratchet's like, no, they were already in the firing line. I was just helping them out. But they continue to argue for a couple more panels. We get to see some Ironhide. And that kind of goes on until finally we jump to Tucson, Arizona. And we get some more humans. Just like I said before, you get a couple, like a page or so with some stuff, just kind of seed some other story stuff.
Yeah.
It's just, I guess a guy's called the cops without reading the panel, and so the cop is there. It's just kind of like, this doesn't really matter. It's just here because something's important is about to happen.
Yeah.
And we see the little vop up in the sky there, and then out pops Skywarp and Blitzwing. Of course, Blitzwing's in jet mode. And the first time I read this, it took me a while to realize that was Blitzwing. I kept wondering, who's the blue jet? Because I'm used to, when you look at Blitzwing in jet mode, you still kind of see some tank stuff. And his design is so different from G1. It wasn't until later he was as a tank, and I'm like, well, who's the tank? Is that Brawl? And then I realized, oh, no, he transformed into the jet. Oh, there's Blitzwing. So that's what we have there. They just kind of show up, and they wreak some havoc. They blow some crap up. And then, I guess that vault, that's Skywarp teleporting, and he's taking Blitzwing with him. That's why the two are there. And they just seem to be zipping around because he says, next. As if, like, they're going to go to some other place and do the same thing. They're kind of zipping around all over the place, blowing stuff up.
I think the reason why they were there originally, because that was the, I guess, where that guy lived. Because it kind of looked like a picture of him in that one little cutscene, the original guy with the PDA in the first
thing. Oh, yeah.
And I think they're trying to blow it up in case he has any records there or something. So that's what they're looking for, trying to blow
up. They're
trying
to destroy the evidence because for their space plan to work, they can't be found out.
Yep.
Because we're going to later find out, I'll go ahead and spoil it now, that the Decepticons have like these, I don't know what exactly they're, I don't remember what they're called, but they're like facsimiles of humans where they eliminate a human and then replace them with, like an infiltration unit. Basically, they're infiltrating the government and places of high power by putting in they're little covert agents. They're like humans, but they're not really. They're kind of programmed to do Decepticon bidding.
Mm-hmm.
They're not really hollow avatars, though. But I'm jumping ahead. We get to that later in the story. So then we go back to the base, and you have Verity still wanting out. All of a sudden, Ratchet's hollow avatar just appears. And this is when she kind of makes the connection that he's some kind of, hologram. And so Ratchet goes on to kind of explain what's going on with, the hollow avatars and how they're able to, they do that so they can move around without having to transform. And as we let them know, they're at the bottom of Lake Michigan. And, of course, he finally talks Verity into giving up the PDA. Which is a crucial point on the next page. And then we see Ironhide. You have several panels of him just staring at a monitor. And the last panel, he punches a button. And he's sending a message to Optimus Prime.
Yes, because if y'all don't know, Optimus Prime's not here yet. Spoiler alert.
Right. Yeah, well, we haven't seen it. He hasn't been shown.
Yeah.
Okay, now this is the page where it talks about the six phase. I'm going to actually kind of read some panels here because, again, we also talk about phase sixers. If you're wondering what is a phase sixer, here Ratchet kind of explains. Because he talked about at the end of the last issue when you know, Prowl was like giving him down the road. He's like, what words do you have? And he said two words, siege mode. And he says, so what's siege mode? This is Hunter talking. And what does it mean to us, to planet Earth? And Ratchet exposits, the Decepticons are specialists in infiltration. That's phase one. They dig in and then slowly destabilize the geopolitical infrastructure, fomenting, that's weird, that has to be a typo or just a bad scan, global anarchy. He says, siege mode is a protective military configuration usually adapted during phase five. I've only seen it once before myself. Well, anyway, it's not good. Okay, so that's what he describes phase five. It was the other ones in between. He turns infiltration and then jumps to phase five. Mm-hmm. And this is when Jimmy asks, well, is there a phase six? He says, trust me, you don't want to know, which, you know, we'll spoil it. Because if you're watching this podcast, you want to be spoiled. You're not planning to read this. Basically, phase six is the total annihilation of the planet. Once the Decepticons are done with it, then they call it phase six. Is when your phase sixers come in, and they're basically the robots that destroy an entire planet, just wipe everything out. And so he says, strange thing is, not only is it far too early for siege mode, there appears to be two distinct command bunkers, one in Oregon and this one in Nebraska. So anyway, you know, they're looking at the pictures on the PDA, and that's when they see, you know, this command bunker, which they apparently didn't know about before this, because usually the Decepticons just have one. And this kind of leads to the second half of this book, where they decide to go take a look. Because they want to know why they moved. They had one, they moved to a new. The question is why. Then we jump again to another scene where Blitzwing and Skywarp show on their tear. This is where I thought, oh, who is this, Brawl? Because I hadn't made the connection that was Blitzwing. You got a tank just tearing stuff up.
Yeah, you don't see any of the kibble of Blitzwing.
No. I mean, yeah. That's why I said, like, this scene here is this panel in the middle. At first glance, I didn't realize that was him transforming. I thought, okay, there's a tank and there's a jet. I thought it was two different, you know, two different robots. Here's a jet and there's a tank. It took me a second to realize he was transforming from tank to jet, and that's when I realized it was Blitzwing.
Yep.
Because then after what happened, I saw this same panel at the bottom again. They're, you know, flipping out, you know, you'll flip and they're gone. I'm like, well, what about the tank? Where'd the tank go? And then that's when I looked back at the panel and was like, oh, that was Blitzwing.
Yeah, kind of that middle panel, that's where he's doing his little, they got a three-stage transformation process. So it's really kind of a, you got a tank, then it looks like the tank got shot because you got kaboom. Uh-huh. And then it's a jet flying out. So it's like, yeah, it's a little bit confusing.
Yeah, well, I mean, plus there's not really good motion lines. Like in that one panel, no. You have tank, like a mid-transformation, and then jet. But on the first read-through, you know, I mean, there's no, it just looks like three different things. Because there's no motion lines to show that this thing is going from this to this to this, which you normally see in a comic.
Yep.
This one knock I'll make toward this artwork is the motion isn't really conveyed very well. So anyway, they blew up something else. And we're back at the Ark, and again, we see Ratchet interacting, his hollow avatar interacting with the humans. And you know, they're still quibbling about the abandoned base, and they really should go see what's in it. And, of course, you know, we go to the next page. They're still kind of quibbling about it. Multiple pages, again, just character-building moments with the interactions between each other. Mm-hmm. So it takes them a few pages to convince Ratchet to take them and let them go, you know, and see what's in the base. So he's sneaking out with the humans, and Bumblebee overhears, and he ends up deciding to go with instead of turning him in. So they all load up Bumblebee's hollow avatar, which I don't know, do we ever see Bumblebee's hollow avatar again after this?
I don't think so.
Because Bumblebee is always portrayed as a male character, but the Hollow Avatar is a cute teenage girl.
Yep, it's a chick, dude. It's like, hey, what the... To me, that was I was really surprised that Bumblebee's avatar was a girl. But, I mean, I guess the association of bugs and girls go together a lot. People can associate it.
It's and more then, of a girl part.
Yeah. And then in G1, of course, he had the pink seat. So, but, you know, you always see Spike in G1, so you just assume it's going to be a guy, and then there's this chick. I'm like, whoa, okay. That was probably – I know it's insignificant, but it's like a big moment for me.
Now, so here we are back on the next page, back to Phoenix, Arizona. This looks like the bus that had the guy had been on earlier that got crashed. It's back at the bus garage, and you know, the mechanic's complaining about how much work's going to be, but he'll get it back roadworthy. And then all of a sudden, kaboom, it gets blown up. And then with the top panel of the next page, we see Thundercracker and Skywarp. Skywarp and Blitzwing next. You know, they're just going around eliminating evidence. And then we see, finally, for the first time, the full image of Starscream, where he's not in the shadows. And he's just kind of sitting there on his little throne. Okay, I recognize behind the throne, where the panel earlier I said didn't make any sense.
Yep.
The artwork right here. It's that's exactly what we saw on that panel. So that's apparently just some crap on the wall in the Decepticon base.
Yeah.
Here's more of that mystery. They weren't showing Starscream all the way. But anyway, that takes us to the end of issue 3. It says to be continued. We're going to see his plan. And actually, Donald Gron had requested we keep these podcasts under an hour. And how long have we been going now, you think?
We've been going a pretty decent amount here.
Yeah, it's taking a little longer. I want to be thorough with these books because of the purpose of this podcast is to let people
probably been about 40 minutes maybe already.
Yeah.
Let me pull up YouTube and see.
Yeah, because I was actually thinking we may, if it's been, you know, closer to, if it's only been 30 minutes, we may keep going, but if it's been 40, 45, we'll probably go ahead and just cut here. You know, this is the end of issue 3, and we'll have like Infiltration, you know, two episodes to cover.
Because this one's got a lot of stuff bringing back, you know, it's we can try to fly through it, but it's got some cool stuff in it.
Yeah, I'd rather not, because I would rather, you know, our listeners you know, watch two episodes or download and listen to two episodes to get the full story than to breeze through too much and cut over stuff. So looks like we're going to have to start limiting these episodes to about 3 to 4 issues depending on how much is going on, how quick we can get through them.
Yeah, we're at the 47 minute mark.
Yeah, I wouldn't care to go over an hour, just a little, if we'd started on time. But again, we got started a little late, because we didn't start to almost 9. So, yeah, I think we'll just go ahead and call it quits for that, because we still have 3 more issues to do, and there's no way we could do that. It'd be at least another 25, 30 minutes minimum, and that'd be too long of an episode, I think, for tonight. So this was Infiltration Part 1, and I promise I will read these last 3 issues before next week, so I won't have to just kind of flip the pages and remember. So any more thoughts on the first half of Infiltration that we read?
It's pretty good. The story starts off just a little bit slow. And for if you're not a comic book fan, it is a little bit slow to get into, especially with Zero and then the first book. So it gets better. It gets a whole lot better, but they're just kind of getting their feet wet with IDW and then bringing the story and kind of retelling the story. And it's just a little bit slow moving. That's all. It's not real fast paced and a lot of action and a lot of eye candy like the newer stuff is.
Right. You know, issues 2 and 3 did kind of pick up the pace a little.
Yes.
I mean, really a lot hasn't happened. It's a lot of character building when you read it, you know.
Yeah.
First humans, then Transformer, you know, and that's a good thing because you're starting a new series. Mm-hmm. These aren't the same characters they were in Dreamwave. I think that's another reason it's so slow to start is IDW's making the point of, look, we're telling the same characters, but we're telling a different story. And in this story, the characters are a little different. So we're going to let you get to know them. So because otherwise, people who had been reading the Dreamwave stuff would just take what they'd read about the characters and that, the personalities they gathered from those stories, and just sort of planted it onto these characters.
Yep.
So I think, you know, IDW is really taking the time to show you, no, these are different characters, and let you get to know them and, you know, forget everything you knew before.
Yeah, I mean it's a decent series starting off. I'll be honest with you, if y'all haven't read it, y'all should probably just pick it up to thumb through it, especially at issue zero, because it has a Simon Furman little Q&A, little interview with Simon Furman on it, and I think that's kind of just worth having, you know.
Yeah, I think too. I know a lot of people don't want to buy a lot of the older stuff. They just will stick to the new hot stories. But I think of the old stuff, I know there's some stuff that's definitely skippable. I know a lot of people don't really care for the ongoing. It's not a bad read, but they don't want to spend the money on it. But I think of all the older stuff, I think this early stuff, the Furman stuff, it would be much worth reading. Even if a lot of the story threads got kind of dropped and never readdressed until lately, and there's still even a lot of other stuff that never got touched on again. It's just a good read on its own. And I really enjoy this early Furman stuff.
Because you get a lot of little issues, you know what I mean? Like a little mini-series on a lot of the older stuff. So you can get a little story arc in about six issues and be done with it. It kind of tells a little bit of a story. Then everything starts connecting as it goes along, but it's kind of neat. You know, it's not an ongoing series like you say, where an ongoing series does tend to get boring after, you know, you got 60, 70 issues. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. A lot of it, you still get a good story, but they start stretching and pulling, I find, a lot of times in some comics to keep it going. So,
well, I don't think what you got to do is you got to keep your story plots fresh. Reboot. Instead of doing a reboot, as far as rebooting the whole comic, just kind of reboot the story. Like, okay, let's close up these story threads, and let's start some new ones. So you're kind of starting over, but not, which is they've done several times with their what they call jumping on points. Mm-hmm. Like the ongoing, for example, was a jumping on point. All Hail Megatron's a jumping on point. Of course, Death of Optimus Prime's a jumping on point. They've had a lot of stuff like that where they've kind of – it's still kind of an ongoing story because they've never really thrown any past stuff out completely. But they don't just keep going with the same story. They kind of say, okay, we're done with that. Now let's tell a new story.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, before we sign off, I just want to tell the listeners to keep checking out the other TFYLP podcast. We have our regular show, which will be on tomorrow night. Look for it as well through the same channels you found this one. I'm not sure what the subject matter is for tomorrow night, but you know it'll be interesting. Those guys have a lot of fun over there. I also ask that you check our Facebook and our Twitter, tftalk.net for the website, and TFYLP. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, all those. And also our sponsors, Captured Prey, great toys, great service, great prices. I'm hoping I'm saying that in the right order. I can never keep it straight. And for your new stuff, and then Mega Toy Fan for your vintage toy needs. You can find them on their respective websites as well as on Facebook, Mega Toy Fans Facebook.com/groups/. Just do a search for mega.toyfan and you'll find them on there. Is there anything else, Brandon, you want to say to our listeners before we sign out?
I guess just the main thing is if y'all really haven't gotten into comics, and if y'all don't know, IDW is the current publisher of the Transformers series of comics, and it's really good stuff out there, man. And you know, some of this older stuff too is good because it's golden, man. It really is, and it's got Furman. So I don't know if y'all are a bigger fan of Furman as I am, but I really enjoy this older stuff.
Yeah, once we get through the Furman stuff, we'll hit some other stuff and. It's some of it's good, some of it's not so good. So, but yeah, just keep listening to the show. If you want to know what's worth picking up, what's not, watch our reviews. And by the time we get caught up with the new stuff, you'll have a better idea what the old stuff's worth dropping the money on. But I guess that'll do it then for this week. I'm Insane Galvatron signing out, and everybody have a good week.
Yeah, have a good one, guys.
You've been listening to TFYLP Newsstand, a production of TFTalk.net. We would like to thank you for listening, and be sure to rate and subscribe to us on your favorite podcast outlet. And most of all, share us with your friends. Please also check out our main show, Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, on Friday nights on YouTube, as well as audio versions from iTunes and our website. This is Weirdwolf, host of TFYLP. And tune in next time for another episode of TFYLP Newsstand.